Bipartisanship is on everyone's lips, but is it really in the cards? From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is the 13th of November. It's a Tuesday. It's make or break time, fiscal cliff-wise. Plus, the head of Microsoft Windows is packing up his laptop and he's going home, rethinking the East Coast power grid post-Sandy. And oh, do we have a Thanksgiving treat for you at the end of the show. You will thank me when it's done.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
President Obama holds back-to-back meetings with labor leaders today and business leaders tomorrow. Then Friday, congressional leaders from both parties will head to the White House to plot our path back from the precipice, that dreaded fiscal cliff of spending cuts and tax hikes. Diane Lim Rogers is chief economist for the Concord Coalition, a think tank committed to sound federal fiscal policy. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's look first at today's and tomorrow's meetings. What's the point? What would the president hope to gain, do you think, by meeting with labor today, business tomorrow?
Well, I think he's hoping that everyone can buy into this idea of shared sacrifice. He's probably trying to break it to all these different constituencies that none of this deficit reduction stuff is going to be easy. There's no quick fixes, free lunches, magic pills, silver bullets, whatever you want to call it. What we're talking about is the need to both address the fiscal cliff, which everyone's afraid of because of its short-term effect on the economy, but at the same time, we do need to commit to some real deficit reduction over the longer term, and that means tax increases and spending cuts.
The pressure to avert the fiscal cliff is enormous. Do you feel that translating at all into pressure to really fix the longer-term problems with entitlements and other things?
Well, the problem is the pressure is like exactly the opposite kind of pressure that you need for the longer-term deficit reduction goal, because the short-term worry about recession concerns gets mixed up with the longer-term need to reduce the deficit, raise national saving, and, you know, kind of get us ourselves on a more sustainable path for the longer term. So it's fine. You know, I actually don't think they're going to have much trouble agreeing on avoiding the fiscal cliff. The question is, are they just going to agree on not reducing the deficit, or are they going to agree to some better form of deficit reduction that is timed better, that is more thoughtful in terms of the mix of revenue increases and spending cuts going forward?
Diane Lim Rogers, chief economist with the Concord Coalition. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, let's do the numbers. After a couple of down days on Wall Street, things are looking up. Today, the Dow at this hour is up about 0.5%, as is the S&P 500. The NASDAQ is just climbing out of the cellar. There might be a reason for that, and we'll get to it in a moment. Home Depot this morning, though, reported higher than expected profits. The rising housing market and consumer spending in general are carrying Home Depot right along with them. Home Depot shares at this moment are up about 4%. So what's up with the NASDAQ? Well, it could be Microsoft. Microsoft shares are down about 3.5% after news that the man once seen by some as next in line for the throne at Microsoft is out. Steven Sinofsky was president of Microsoft's flagship product, Windows, and his departure comes only a couple of weeks after Microsoft rolled out its new operating system, Windows 8, and the Surface, a flashy new tablet computer designed to run it. David Brancaccio is the host of our sister show, Marketplace Tech, and we asked him to drop in for a quick live chat about Steven Sinofsky and Windows 8. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning.
So who is this Steven Sinofsky?
No less than Grand Emperor of Windows, the product
that will define
the future of Microsoft. He's the executive who won kudos for rescuing the company from the train wreck that was Windows Vista and replacing it quite quickly with Windows 7 that won the hearts of users. Microsoft watchers say he's a guy who inspires respect for his managerial prowess, but who may rub others the wrong way, a polarizing figure, according to some reports. It might not have been the perfect person to lead Microsoft should Steve Ballmer ever retire.
Does that give us some clues as to why he's hitting the road?
Well, it was apparently a mutual decision made by Mr. Sinofsky and Ballmer. The question, of course, is whether this 23-year veteran of the company is leaving on a high note. Hey, Windows 8 was a success. Bask in the glory. Time to move on. Or leaving on a lower note. Hey, Windows 8 reviews have been spotty. Today, Jeff, the sudden announcement is being read by Kremlinologists as a bad sign for Windows 8 sales. Without much evidence yet to back up that reasoning, Windows has only been out a couple weeks.
So, David, I know you've been playing around with it. I put Windows 8 on my main home computer last week. I couldn't help myself.
How'd it go?
I admit, it takes a little getting used to, especially toggling back and forth to what is now basically a start screen, right, instead of the old start menu everybody's used to.
Yeah, it's a different environment, like getting off an airplane in a foreign land. You can click the tile marked desktop, right, and it switches the system back to the familiar Windows interface.
Yeah, but of course, it's always just like this is the little elements that are not quite there. I'm always going back to that corner for the start screen. What do you think about the fact that they have taken programs and made them apps? I mean, I found that my brain, after using a smartphone for a couple of years now, is very attuned to this sort of app-like way of computing. Microsoft.
Yeah, you have to think a bit like you're using a smartphone. Also, some reviewers think the Windows 8 system is biased in favor of touchscreen tablets, which works with your finger rather than keyboard or mouse quite as well. But I find it's quite simple just to convert it back to the old Windows-looking system.
Right. And mine, of course, is on a screen that is much larger than a touchscreen. But my brain is adjusting, so we'll see. David Brancaccio, host of Marketplace Tech, thank you.
My pleasure.
And just while I'm still geeking out here, the Star Wars movies are known for many wonderful things. The quality of the script writing, yeah, not so much. These are the movies that brought you lines like, laugh it up, fuzzball. And the repeated use of no with lots of O's on the end. And who can forget?
I have a bad feeling about this.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Well, Disney, of course, announced the other day it is buying Lucasfilm and the Star Wars franchise, and they're going to make more movies. And this morning they've confirmed that there's a new writer on the case, Michael Arndt, who wrote the critically acclaimed screenplays for Toy Story 3 and Little Miss Sunshine. Very interesting. That creates a pretty high bar. May the force be with him.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Folks out east are still dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane/Superstorm Sandy, and here at Marketplace, of course, so are we. Estimates suggest that property damage along the New Jersey coast could hit $20 billion. That could mean a lot of beachfront property for sale. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein's been checking into the real estate market after Sandy.
Regina Gelzer is a real estate attorney and lifelong resident of Toms River. The coastal town was hit hard by the storm. Homes were damaged. Some were destroyed.
I think a lot of people are just going to take what money they can from insurance and try to fire sale the properties.
Gelzer says many of them will be worth less.
Something that was on the water that was, say, $2.2 million is going to drop significantly. Still be over $1 million, but it's going to lose a lot of value.
At this point, New Jersey realtors say figuring out the market is more art than science. Some homeowners have yet to even visit their properties. But Frank Shoemaker in Ocean City thinks plenty of people are happy to slap down $500,000 or more for a piece of ocean action.
I think a lot of the shore towns in New Jersey offer a quick getaway. I think that's something that has an allure to our area.
As they say in the real estate business, location, location, location. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
In the Northeast, there are still tens of thousands of people without electricity, and that's got a lot of power grid experts asking whether it's time to rethink our electrical infrastructure. Arshad Mansour is a senior vice president of the Electric Power Research Institute. He talked earlier today with my Morning Report colleague, Jeremy Hobson.
All right. Well, so in a perfect world, what would it take to upgrade our grid and be ready for these kinds of things so they don't cause disruptions for weeks?
One thing we always think about is let's make it more hardened. Let's make the infrastructure so that it can survive anything that Mother Nature can throw at him. What can we do so we can recover more quickly? But if the customers are out of power for weeks, what can we provide them as a technology option so they can cope with an outage better?
But when we talk about hardening, what are we talking about?
Well, hardening, you know, we all think about undergrounding. You take an overhead line and you put it underground. That is one of the options for hardening. If you look at what happened in Manhattan, in this case, it was flood. So if you're looking at a flood impact, you may have to either raise the levees higher or you may have to raise the substations higher.
Well, what would it cost, for example, to put all the lines on the coasts underground?
Well, if you look at undergrounding cost, it can range anywhere from hundreds of thousands to $2 million a mile. I'll give you a specific example of a study that was done in North Carolina in 2003. The average cost for undergrounding had ranged from hundreds of thousands of dollars to $2 million. But the bottom line was, if you had to underground everything in North Carolina, it would have taken more than $40 billion and it would have raised the bill for the consumers by more than 100%. So selective undergrounding is the way to go. Just undergrounding everything is not a cure-all.
Arshad Mansour is Senior Vice President at the Electric Power Research Institute. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for inviting us.
The LA Lakers got a new coach this week. His name is Mike D'Antoni, and that is a first and a last name, not, as some people on Twitter think, three first names, Mike D'Antoni. Some Laker fans were hoping, though, the team could appeal to former coach Phil Jackson to come out of retirement, be the club's savior, and get the team back to championship status. It was not to happen. But how does that kind of out with the new, in with the old kind of strategy work in the business world? We asked Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji to find out.
In the movie business, it worked for this franchise. Sean Connery quit playing James Bond after the flick You Only Live Twice and was replaced. But United Artists paid a hefty price to get him back.
Where is he? I shan't ask you politely next time.
Diamonds Are Forever made way more cha-ching with the old Bond as its star. Gotham Mukunda is author of Indispensable, When Leaders Really Matter.
Some people are so indispensable that we cannot imagine the role as anything other than this person.
Mukunda says truly successful companies are dedicated to more than the bottom line. He says they have identities and values. And if they've strayed from those values, it makes sense to bring back the old leader. Think Steve Jobs and Apple.
But if that's not the problem, right? If the problem is that you've slipped on operational excellence, then what you need is someone who's great at operational excellence.
So, do the LA Lakers need their guru back? Or just someone who can coach? The shot clock is ticking. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
And finally, you know, there are lots of things to be thankful for this time of year. Friends, family. How about this new teen pop song from Nicole Westbrook coming out on iTunes tomorrow, just in time for the holiday?
Oh, 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 it's Thanksgiving. All right. We are gonna have a good time.
Potatoes. Yeah, see? Catchy, isn't it? It's produced by the same guy who did the notorious Friday video / iTunes release, I guess, which was 2011's most disliked video on YouTube. Let's be thankful this year's turkey has a shelf life of only about 2 weeks. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
Can't be hateful, gotta be grateful, gotta be grateful, can't be hateful. Mashed potatoes on my table. I got ribs smelling up my neighbor's crib. Can't deny having good times. We be laughing till we cry.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.